All right. Well, welcome to another episode of Flip Your Friday. I'm your host, Wynn Silberman. This is my co-host, KC LeBlanc. And I got to tell you, we have a very special guest in Veronica Mudra today. Thank you very much for being here. We really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. It's an honor to be here.
Yeah. So, Casey, just a little background. I know you did a little research on her, but, you know, the first thing I'd like to say is that, Veronica, you know, you founded White Ribbon Foundation, right?
In the U.S.
In the USA. Can you just, let's just jump right into stuff, because I hate having to, you know, just kind of scurry on along.
Let's just want
to
jump right in.
Jump right in. Like, what?
Into our new digs. I mean, yeah, come on.
Okay, no fun. Long intros.
Yeah, no long
we're
intros.
We're not doing a long intro, but I mean, come on. We're doing a new set with new pillows and stuff.
Exactly.
No nothing?
What is White Ribbon? What is White Ribbon?
Really, I'm just getting into,
yeah, I'm tired of intros. Like, it's fine. She's going to be special. We're going to have fun. Let's go.
We'll have a lot of subjects.
Okay,
besides that.
Yeah.
So the White Ribbon campaign is the largest in the world male initiative against domestic violence towards women and girls. So I did not found this movement. It was founded 32 years ago in Canada, in Toronto.
Wow.
And it became so popular because it's a grassroots campaign, so anyone can join. So now we have 63 offices around the world, and I co-founded the American chapter and the Ukrainian chapter. Since I'm Ukrainian, I'm a former CEO of White Ribbon in Ukraine and the co-founder.
That's really, really interesting. And I'm going to dig right into something that's even more fascinating, which is how we met, Casey.
Oh,
I'm just going to be really honest. It's not Tinder. It's not anything fun. Okay.
not try out.
Yeah. Quite frankly, I got asked by a very powerful friend of mine, businessman who always sees business opportunity. He happened to own a lumberyard in a particular country that we don't have to disclose. But he called me and said, listen, I want to get a hold of President Zelensky. And I was like, okay. He's like, you know how to do things. You know how to connect. You're always a connector. You'll find a way. Just find a way to get me. I want to get a hold of Zelensky because I want to help rebuild Ukraine. And the war is going on. And I'm thinking, Jesus, there's a war going on. And you're already here thinking about potential IMF money, which we can go into later. But it's like, how do I do this? Because I do respect him. I do respect his business acumen, and I want to deliver.
Are you nervous right now?
No, I'm not nervous.
Just calm down.
I'm not nervous.
IMF, you know.
Yeah, like he's. It feels like Are you like? Well, feel like your
war.
Your heart is beating really fast.
No,
just like
war.
Take a deep breath. I know
I'm
haven't done this in a while.
I know, but
just relax. It's gonna be okay. Like, have a good time.
I this is very intense because it's fun.
I know. Well, and also too, you're talking about a subject that's very sensitive.
We're talking about war and business.
I'm just trying to make you feel at ease. I want to make sure he's a comfortable interview for me. Really?
Should I just take a deep breath? Okay, that feels better.
Even that was quick.
Anyways, the point is, through various connections, I was introduced to Veronica, and Veronica was able to facilitate an opportunity for me to make the connections with not only President Zelensky, but a number of generals in Ukraine. And that's how we were able to potentially be able to grow some business together. But one of the things Veronica and I were talking about is just business and connections and the right way to do things and not necessarily just the wrong way to do things. And, you know, we mentioned that there were certain people that when you would introduce them to certain people like President Zelensky, they would go straight to what they wanted. There's an art to things. And that's kind of one of the first questions that I wanted to bring up to you is you are very connected politically. You've done many, many good things in the world, but it's given you the opportunity to meet many powerful people. How do you see what's the best way to facilitate business in the context of what we were trying to do, for example, which is, you know, connect some dots and see how we can potentially rebuild a country once the war is over?
It is definitely an extraordinary circumstances we live now, and nobody expected to have worse. Now it's Ukraine, but not only. So in this extraordinary situation, I think that all the network and all the connections and all the opportunities that can help to the country in such a situation will work and should be utilized. So since we ran in Ukraine the largest campaign against domestic violence, supported by Olena Zelenska, the First Lady of Ukraine, supported by the U.S. Embassy and Embassy of Canada and all the law enforcement system in Ukraine, we do have an access to an opportunity and ability to facilitate certain connections and certain introductions just to help the country. So normally, probably that's not what a nonprofit would do. But in a situation like that, when a critical infrastructure of Ukraine is so damaged and needs so much reconstruction and development, so when we speak about the hospitals, the roads, the bridges, the residential buildings, I'm not even speaking about the commercial real estate that was damaged so much. So when we speak about that, we definitely want to make sure that Ukrainian companies will have an opportunity to collaborate with international partners who can step in with investments, with their experiences. As Win was telling, his friends have great experience in rebuilding the critical infrastructure that includes bridges, includes roads. So that kind of experience is needed in Ukraine, and definitely the opportunity is there in terms of, like, from one side helping people and helping the country, but from the other side to bring international business players to the Ukrainian market and to during the times that when a country is in need.
So that brings up an interesting point. How do you even get into that arena? Meaning, how do you create political clout, or how do you work your way up to, you know, shaking hands with the president of Ukraine?
The thing that it's non-political. So since we're politically neutral as a nonprofit organization, and we are always open to work with everybody who is open to work with us and support the cause that is very bipartisan, it's non-political, it relates to gender equality, to women rights, to equal opportunities, equal pay, et cetera, et cetera, including the country as Ukraine. So because we usually collaborate with government, so we have no intentions to go against the system. So if there is something wrong in the system, we prefer to collaborate and work with the system rather than, like, protest against someone and heavily, like, just go against. So we prefer to bring positive change. So since we have this historically collaborative spirit, so we work with governmental agencies. So we work with law enforcement agencies. We work with embassies. So that's non-political aspect, but it's just an aspect of being present in the country. And when we speak about gender policies in Ukraine, we have to collaborate with government. So that's the way we work together.
Interesting. Okay.
And in the U.S. as well.
Yeah, we need some of that in the U.S. is where we stop being so political on every single issue and one side or the other where people are fighting. So when you have a nonprofit that is for women's rights and equality, how did you get involved with something like that? And how did you work your way up to the level that you got to?
It really happened organically, but again, because we, White Ribbon Campaign, is known to be very collaborative, very welcoming campaign. So we are gender neutral. We stand against domestic violence towards women, but it's genderless campaign. So when we started to work, for example, with the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs in the U.S., and we launched the largest in the U.S. movement against sexual harassments and sexual assaults among veterans or people who served in militaries. So we made this campaign genderless. So we recognize that both genders can suffer from that, but so we made it as tolerant as possible, so, and as neutral as possible. So I know that in the U.S. we have very, you know, strong specifics when it comes to Democrats or Republicans, but I think that campaigns like that are mutual ground for both parties. So we work with previous administration, we work with this administration. So I think subjects like that, equal opportunities, equal pay, women rights, human rights, should be a mutual ground for both parties. So this year, this year, we were invited to Congress, and we were supported by both congressional members, Republicans and Democrats. So, and that's the beauty of this campaign, that we do work with governmental agencies, but we stay neutral.
How do you find that the organization makes an impact? So you guys are a nonprofit. How do you raise money? How do you go out and bring the money in? And then what do you do with the money? How do you decide what to do with the money to make the greatest impact?
We are a small team. We're based in California, but we work a lot in Washington, D.C. So with a small team, we always make sure that every dollar invested by a donor brings like triple results. So and this can be achieved by collaboration, by collaborative efforts. So that's why we do not do a lot of campaigns, but we try to do campaigns on federal level. For example, the campaign, the White Ribbon VA campaign, is a joint campaign with the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. Then we want to launch next year a campaign against substance abuse, against fentanyl overdoses. Then we launch campaign that is called Cyber Against Trafficking, that stands against human trafficking and abuse of cryptocurrencies in transactions related to illegal activities as human trafficking, sex trafficking, child porn, etc., etc. So we try to do the campaigns that have bigger impact, but we can afford doing that by collaborating with other agencies, governmental, non-governmental. For cyber campaign, we collaborated with a few intelligence agencies like Dark Horse Intelligence, Alter Ego. So we try to get together people who are professional in certain areas and just collaborate with them. So our donors know specifically that we don't do a lot of campaign, but every campaign we do, we try to maximize the impact.
Doesn't it seem like human trafficking and sexual assault stuff has caught in the eye of a lot more people in popularity from the standpoint of the main humans just on Main Street understanding that this is a much bigger problem than I think what a lot of people with the Epstein and like some of the...
I was just watching a documentary on, and you can verify if this is true or not, but on Ukrainian children being stolen by the Russians and being effectively brainwashed and literally fighting in their military against their own people. I mean, that's riveting to me. I think that's true. I don't know if it is, but I'm sure you might know a little bit about it.
Yeah, the numbers can be really different, but currently it's between 300,000 and 500,000 children were moved to Russia, and they were technically moved from their parents from Ukraine, and so the children being separated from their parents.
This is all just during the war, just recently.
During the war.
Because the most recent war. So this is all new data.
Military conflict started on the east of the country back in 2013-14, right? So it escalated to the war, full-scale war that we witness it now, but it started long time ago. So the first kids that were impacted, the kids from the eastern Ukraine, because they're closer to Russia. Mm. And now there are a lot of international efforts to bring those kids back. And this is one of the most painful, most sensitive subject. Then about the human trafficking, the data in related to cyber security and cryptocurrencies shows that countries like Emirates, where the use of cryptocurrencies became so widespread and the regulations are not as strict as in America, that human traffickers using cryptocurrencies a lot in countries like UAE. And specifically, Dubai became one of the capitals of crypto transactions, but also of human trafficking in related to crypto transactions. And as we all know, for example, the CEO of Binance was charged with criminal investigation. So, but the positive thing is that the crypto exchanges like Binance, they hold the data and the transactions that should be anonymous in a crypto world are not actually anonymous.
That's the beauty of blockchain, right? I mean, it's basically it's a ledger that everybody can see.
Right, right. So by collaborating with crypto exchanges like Binance, we actually can facilitate and help to law enforcement to track down those transactions related to illegal activities.
So let me ask you a question. So you're biting off a lot. What you've just mentioned over the last couple of minutes, you guys are tackling huge, huge issues. So what is your role within the organization, and walk me through maybe like a day-to-day. Like what do you do as part of the role when there's so many different things that you just described?
I'm the co-founder and CEO. So I'm in charge of daily operations. And so I'm in charge of I decide mutually with board members and with our team members which campaigns we're going to run per year. So I mentioned a lot of subjects, but there are actually like three subjects. So this is domestic violence, sexual harassment, sexual assault, human trafficking, and potentially substance abuse campaign. Mm-hmm. So it's not a lot for the year.
It's there's 4 million buckets, and then it tends to spread out.
Yeah. In terms of every campaign, then we decide which tools we're going to use. For example, we produced a short film called Reunited that won about 6 awards already this year as the best short international film project, the best social justice project, in support of the campaign that we ran in D.C., the Hague Convention Reform for Refugees under Domestic Violence Protection Program. So this campaign just was started a long time ago, but I mean that we decide what do we want to do in terms of campaign, because one thing is to work in DC, but another thing is to create a public discourse around the subject and get media attention, public attention. So, for example, we shot this short film that was great tool to support the campaign that probably you guys even never heard about, like Hague Convention and child abduction aspect. Like,
right.
It's very narrow, but to bring attention to that, we used, since we're in LA, we utilized the Hollywood aspect of it.
Yeah, what was that movie that came out? The famous one that brought a ton of eyeballs, a ton of attention.
He's a little bit in trouble right now.
Sounds of Silence, right? What was the impact of that movie on your guys' organization, or just in general, with child abduction and sexual assault? With the stories that come out about Epstein, and then that movie, and then it just brought a lot of attention to a subject I think a lot of people were either in denial about, didn't know about, and so now it's more mainstream, at least to talk about and be like, wow, this is a much bigger issue than I think what people really recognize. And I would imagine, correct me if I'm wrong, it's a bigger issue outside of America, or is it America playing into it, or how do you see that from a global perspective, since you have so much experience with it?
So actually, the Sound of Silence, it was scheduled for screening at iHollywood Film Festival, where we received an award as the best international film project. So we were there. We were watching all the other nominees, and what I can say that films like that make a huge impact because it brings the subject right in front of you. Mm-hmm. One thing you know that somewhere there is a human trafficking. Even living in Los Angeles, you might know, I've heard something is going on in San Bernardino or Riverside, but you're not there, so you kind of know, but you don't. But when you see it in front of you, when you experience and live the subject through the story of a specific children that they were trafficked, so when this human trafficking has a face, so then you understand the subject in a different way, in a more emotional way. So I think that everything that makes people feel the subject, not just like read about it, but actually feel it, so makes a huge impact. And we watched amazing films at this festival about the crypto world, about crypto mining, about the climate change, and about the human trafficking. There were a few very strong projects. So, and our project was about refugees under domestic violence. Again, it's a very narrow subject.
Yeah.
But when you watch it through the lens of specific individual, a mother and a child who come into America from another country trying to make it here, struggling, as refugees, then you kind of think about it in a different way, that it's not far. It's actually like right next to you.
Right. Well, it's a good point, is that storytelling plays such a role in whatever you're doing, right? It's you are, as a nonprofit, you're telling a story to try to generate more dollars to be able to make a bigger impact, et cetera.
Absolutely. And I mean, and let's take a step back in roles. I mean, and going back into business and entrepreneurship, because you are implicitly an entrepreneur as well. You know, we've mentioned, just to recap, that, you know, bipartisanship, having a foundation that is relying on bipartisanship, gives access. And through access, you're given the opportunity to grow business. So I have a question for you. So let's say that I'm an entrepreneur. I recognize and I hear about people having an ability to do business, like making rebuilds, just going back to being able to rebuild a country. If I were to call you and get in contact with you and have absolutely zero idea of how to accomplish anything, but want to try my luck at, if you want to call it luck, at trying to grow business through this connection, what would you do? What would you consult? How would you teach someone, or what would you recommend that entrepreneur do to try to engage and succeed in any campaign? Let's just say I have a lumber company, for example, and I want to try to see if I can get my lumber company to be contributing over there. Is there particular advice that you would give me?
I would say that if we speak specifically about Ukraine, right? I mean, every business often starts with like-minded people coming together and brainstorming, but there is something that unites these people. So, for example, if to speak about the nonprofit as one of the avenues. So our donors are everybody from the business world, but they're supporting us because they have something in common. They believe in certain values. So I think that step number one, understanding there is a network of like-minded people. And among this network, there are people who understand that the country like Ukraine needs the infrastructure to be rebuilt and to be developed, because the war will be over. It's not a matter of if, it's just a matter of when. So when the war will be over, the next step that is happening now is how to help the country to get back to normal life, how to help the hospitals to be rebuilt, the schools, the preschools, the regular infrastructure. So I think that the first step is to understand that there are like-minded people.
Connect and value.
Connected by values, and then take it from there. And then there are a lot of now conferences and events organized by Embassy of Ukraine in the U.S. and vice versa for business people who want to participate in rebuilding Ukraine. So, and the way you can get information there, you can get information through our foundation. So, since we do work with U.S. Embassy in Ukraine and vice versa.
So you are facilitating networking, right? Casey, I mean, look, I think that it's a cross-section of business. I think networking in any business is very important. Is there anything that you do in particular that helps facilitate networking for you? She's mentioning a tenet of value as a way to connect. Is there?
Well, she also mentioned like-mindedness, right?
I think
you start to talk and execute. I think you don't just create a network by showing up. You have to create a network through a lot of shaking hands, conversations, you know, like-minded people, connections of connections. That was one of the things we talked about before we started the interview today, is how are you utilizing your network, and how did you grow it? How did you build it? I know you said politically that you guys are neutral, so you have both sides of the aisle. That helps, right? If you don't have to take a stance and you can be right down the middle. My business is very much the same. We're not picking winners and losers. We're a neutral third party. And through that, we're able to garner a lot of relationships, and that helps.
Right.
What does your network mean to you? For me, it's my business. Our network is our people. Our people is our business. Without that, in the service industry, we're nothing.
Right.
I would imagine that could transcribe to any business almost anywhere. But do you have an opinion on that, as far as what that means to you with relationships, people, and network?
I think that in our modern world and the speed that we live in, that relations and communications is number one. And for example, I don't do only nonprofit. I have also for-profit business, and I was telling
Walker, we'll get into it. Yeah,
earlier, finish your thought. About the cybersecurity company that I became a part of, but it was born as an as a volunteering initiative in Ukraine. So because our office in Ukraine, our team members volunteered a lot, and one of the volunteering direction was to help international in international communication between the cyber teams. Mm. And because Cyber Army in Ukraine is a name, but it's actually collective efforts of like-minded people, of like-minded companies in cyber, in artificial intelligence, in special military technologies. They volunteer and give back a lot to Ukraine, and they're located internationally, but they have Ukrainian like roots or co-founders or team members. So from doing that, then we move to the next step. We understand that we can bring that experience to the U.S. and its alliance, and we formed a Ukrainian-owned, women-owned company in here in Orange County, in California. And this year, we were invited to present our company in Pentagon. We were mostly speaking about lessons learned in Ukraine, and we were speaking about emerging and disruptive technologies.
Give an example of what that means, a disruptive technology, or what are you speaking of?
We speak about the UAS and counter-UAS technologies, the anti-jammers, and a lot of dynamic technologies that are very fast-growing in Ukraine because the Russian side and the Iranians, they are sending a lot of new drones to Ukraine, so Ukrainian side needs to be really dynamic and reacting fast to new technologies. And those lessons are battlefield-born, battlefield-proven. So technically, we bring battlefield-proven technology to the U.S. so U.S. can utilize it internationally, not just for America.
Will you rank, since you have a cybersecurity background, give us an idea of ranking, like maybe give it a 1 to 100 scale as far as a grade. China, Russia, Ukraine, U.S. How far advanced are these countries that are, that, you know, in the cyber world and into, you know, we just had a company in our space that is a multi-billion dollar company that completely shut it down. It, like the idea that that's even possible to me is so wild. So from a cybersecurity standpoint, like where does the U.S. rank? Where does Ukraine rank? Russia, China, some of these big ones where you see a lot of activity from a cyber, you know, a cyber attack standpoint. Where do you see the world from that perspective?
So as a part of cybersecurity company, I do not have a formal IT or a military background. So my role in the company is facilitating the connections and networking.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But I can give a good example. So when everybody saw the attack that happened in Israel, so besides the kinetic attack, the physical terrorism, there was also cyber attack on Israel. And actually, Israel is one of the countries that being attacked the most per second. And when you see the list of attackers, those hackers groups, they are a lot Iranians and Russians.
Wow.
So in cyber world, you cannot disregard the potential abilities and knowledge of Russia. And plus countries like Russian alliance and countries like India, known for a long time for a strong IT specialist in big amounts. So, but that's a very bad tendency in the world to be, the world is getting so bipolar, you know. So we have America, the good guys, and Ukraine
sure,
included.
Sure,
and then we have Russia. Iran and terrorist groups and hackers groups, so the bad guys. And I think it's the worst tendency because the world becoming too black and white. So I think that the way to eliminate it is to bring more offensive way of thinking to the Western world. So be prepared to the worst, but because Western world is always about cyber defense, how we can build better cyber defense, but having a mentality of, you know, be more cyber offensive. Mm.
Interesting.
A cyber offense.
The best defense is a good offense.
Well, and, you
it's
know,
an active defense. It's called active defense.
Active defense. But I do want to touch on that something very important to our audience, and one of the reasons why they listen to us is, you know, I just listened to you, and Casey asked you a question about, you know, cyber activity, cyber defense, whatever you want to call it, and you mentioned something very important that I want to really highlight, which is you didn't have any experience, but in entrepreneurship, you don't necessarily have to be the expert in what you want to do. But what you do need to have is facilitate connection and understand who the right people and who the right team you have in order to win. So how exactly did you go about finding, you knew that there was an opportunity here. There's a problem to solve. There's an issue to solve. You wanted to get involved. How did you go about finding your team, and what exactly did you look for in various traits, and how are you here now with this company?
But that's the thing, that I know this team for a very long time, because that is our organization's team in Ukraine, but they volunteered for specific cyber groups. So that part of team I knew. But the opportunity became like a low-hanging fruit after my team members started to interact a lot with those really talented IT specialists around the world, like-minded people who want to help Ukraine. So then we realized that there are like 1,400 ethical hackers that we're in touch with. And we realized that
Did you say ethical?
Ethical hackers. It's a term.
Is it really? What is that? So I don't mean to interrupt, but ethically hacking.
Yeah.
Right.
Is that, so with your consent?
Oh,
so,
what are you trying to crack a like?
That's a name. That's actually a name of a profession. So it's when you're a certified ethical hacker, it means that you are ethical towards international rules and regulations. Oh. So you're not compliant. Hacking someone's phone without a consent. If you have the consent, that is ethical.
Just like you're an ethical AI robot.
Sure.
Oh, did you hear about the attack? The robot Tesla factory attacked a worker, an employee.
The actual robot, the physical robot.
Yeah, it was like just a few days ago.
I think there was Elon on a remote control. There's no doubt. He's just fucking with us. okay, so sorry, I interrupted. But ethical hacking, I had never heard that term. What is it like in Ukraine right now? I know we're kind of moving around topics, but being that you have such an experience over there, what is it like in a war zone?
What's it like being in? Have you been in Ukraine during the war? I mean,
yeah.
What's it like?
Yeah, we went to Ukraine this February as a group from the United States to see how we can help and how we can help specifically in development and reconstruction areas. So, I mean, when I came there, I was not there for years, but when I arrived, of course, you see burned houses, you see damaged bridges, you see the roads completely damaged, you see the schools damaged, hospitals damaged, you see famous artists coming there and doing murals on those damaged buildings. Like Banksy did really a lot of murals.
Are most civilians gone?
Yeah, they are evacuated. So yeah. Some towns are like ghost towns. So you do realize that there are a lot of people who immigrated from Ukraine, but it doesn't mean that they will not want to return.
Right.
So it really depends on the reconstruction and development. Once there is development in place, that a lot of people want to come back. So they love the country, and if not the war, they would not relocate. So definitely you hear the sirens every hour, and that's a real war zone.
Yeah.
What's the temperature with people that are there? I mean, obviously there's fear and scare. Are they optimistic that Ukraine can win, or optimistic that they can negotiate? What's the end game? I know it's probably some sort of settlement, right? Is that what people are wanting sooner rather than later? Are they trying to get to a point of like when we could talk about negotiation, but there's much to it. I understand, but I guess
it's interesting. And please answer the question, but let me just examine a little bit more. It's settlement in land, but you know, we talk about, for example, rebuild. I would assume that part of this agreement is not only land and boundary, but and also opportunity to rebuild. Because that's your economy. Absolutely. I believe that
the negotiation
will
be. You don't
think that Russian companies are going to come in and have opportunity to rebuild?
Well, that's just all centered around money and power. Well, what do you
think? I think the temperature in the country is different. There is no settlement, as there are no negotiations with terrorists. Mm. There is no settlement mentality. So the world saw that probably finally that. Like Russians, Ukrainians, Belarusians, Polish people, Hungarian people, we're different people who have different mentality. Yeah. We have different background. We came from the
different
same
culture.
Part of the world, but the fact that Germany is next to France doesn't make German people French.
Right.
Yeah.
So we are built different. We are freedom fighters, and we do not break. We bend, but then we fight back. So there is no settlement, no negotiations about the land apart, because Ukraine is independent country, it's independent state historically since 5th century, and it will stay so. So even with the war, Ukraine is still there, and the United States stepped in heavily, and as well as UK, as well as all the civilized world. That will not happen. Ukraine will not fall. And as the original Putin's plan that Ukraine will just fold in 3 to 7 days, it did not happen because of the spirit of people. So there is no spirit of settlements in terms of the anything. They have to leave our country. That's number one rule. That's the mentality that allows us as Ukrainians to survive. Other than if not the spirit, Ukraine probably will not exist.
Yeah,
and that's step number one. The step number two is the reconstruction has nothing to do with Russian companies.
Okay,
so we have a lot of Canadian, Latin countries who are ready to step in. We have American countries who want and who can participate. A lot of European countries who are willing to give their best technologies. A lot of business partners outside of Russia. So definitely it's out of discussion even. So, and the ethical part that Putin still has a support among oligarchs in Russia, among all these companies, just shows it all. If they would have a different mentality, not a slave mentality, because they listen to a Tsar. Like nowadays, it's like, where do you see dictatorship on that level? So Putin is like a Tsar, and then all the people with huge assets just listen to him. In our country, that would not be possible. We do not have slaves mentality. And it ain't going to happen that Ukraine will be falling into slave mentality. That's why we prefer to work with companies like American companies, American government, or international government, everything democracy-wise. Mm. So there is no even a question about like settlements or having Russian companies rebuilding Ukraine. Absolutely not.
Yeah, I agree. Wynn's very, like, he's incorrect a lot, so that doesn't surprise
me. I'm incorrect, but
it's a question, because
if you guys don't know.
But it is. But it also is, like, war is about power. It's about territory, and mostly about money.
And if there's a negotiation to facilitate peace, it's very complex, because, like she says, there's a culture, there's a specific identity that the Ukrainians have, and there's some non-starters. Maybe.
But ultimately, like, it will come down to some sort of settlement, right? Like, there's a negotiation that you would think would end. Because to win would mean what, right? Are you going to take over Russia? Or are they going to succeed? Like, what does a victory even look like at this point?
We want to stay on our land.
Right. So, but that's negotiated.
So that's what we want. So that's the negotiations part. We will stay as Ukraine. We were independent state, and that's in our DNA. We are Ukrainians, and that's where we'll be Ukrainians. So it's not negotiable part. The war, how it will end, eventually it will end at the table and of discussion. Sure. I believe so, right? So there should be some international third party that can mediate.
Absolutely. And there needs to be leadership. And that's a common theme that we talk about throughout all these podcasts is leadership, which leads to my next question. And it's addressed towards your perspective on President Zelensky. What do you think his best trait is as a leader so far? They said the war was going to last only 5 days or 7 days, right? We're still here. He's battling. He's doing everything he can. Is there a particular trait that you are particularly proud of on him? Is there something that you would say, look, this is one thing that I can say about President Zelensky who shows an example of leadership really well?
I think that he's great in marketing Ukraine. So he created actually, he did a lot to bring the Ukraine as a brand on international arena stronger. He showed to the world who are Ukrainians. Like, remember this phrase, the statement that I don't need a ride, I need ammunition.
Yeah.
When he was offered to be evacuated for right. him and his family, he said, I don't need a ride, I need ammunition. So, and by the way, Banksy put that as a part of mural. So I think that the spirit, you know, remember, he's an actor.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
He's
one of our leaders was an actor in Ronald Reagan.
Professionally, he's a producer and an actor. So his ability to deliver the speech, the level of professionalism being an actor, I think that also helped a lot to articulate and verbalize the message that was needed to be delivered to international community.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you a question. You're a CEO. At some level, you're needing to deliver the same type of message dependent upon who the audience is. But, right, like how do you prepare for something like that? How do you prepare to talk to the political people on both sides of the aisle when you're either raising money or getting your message across?
You were at the Pentagon. Like, what goes into...
So you're presenting, right? Like, you're presenting, Zelensky's presenting, CEOs present all the time. People are presenting all the time. People are acting to some level all the time. Right. How do you get into character? How do you present? How are you portraying the message correctly to get the most reward or ROI at whatever given... you know, stage that you're on?
I think that, you know, there is a saying that don't try to be to play someone else's role because everybody else are taken except you. So just being real,
authentic,
I think.
Yeah.
So being authentic and bring your experience, your unique experience that only you've been through to other people. And then speaking from your heart, it's also very, I think, important because, again, nowadays there are so many technologies. We have access to any information, but what makes you unique is your experience. So when you speak from your heart and when you deliver professionally your message, but through your personal experience, and when you touch people's hearts, that would brings you to a different level. Because even like this year, we had a White Ribbon Day in Congress, and it was supported by a few congresswomen. For example, Debbie Dingell, she'd been in Congress forever. I knew she is a prominent advocate for women rights, but I never knew she is a domestic violence survivor. I never knew she had to hide in closet during all her childhood because her father was a drug addict. And she'd been through horrible domestic violence situation in households. She had to hide in closet together with her sisters. And when you hear that story told by a congresswoman with her experience, then you understand that even how it doesn't matter how high you are, you're still human, driven by your personal experience. So if she was able to speak at our event and tell it, us how she was hiding in a closet with her sisters and what it and she is a survivor because she didn't know if she would make it through the night when she was a child.
That is just for me the epitome of rapport and how you facilitate connection right there. Shared human experience will implicitly connect two people and make them feel a certain way to go deeper and see how they can help each other. For me, that's business. That's one of the definitions I have is how you grow business is build rapport. Well, how do you build rapport? through shared human experience, through taking interest. It doesn't matter what the price. I might be trying to sell you this glass later, but let me be human with you. Let me share experiences. Perhaps there's a connective tissue that will facilitate this. And then, sure, it's a good product. There's tons of other products just like this, but because we have this implicit connection, I win. Mm-hmm. We win. Right? I think that's a big deal.
Was there some moment in your life? We've been on this podcast several different times, and there's this thread amongst all of the people that we've interviewed where there was like a moment in, you know, the people that we're talking to, their lives, that whether sometimes it was their worst moment, sometimes it was their best moment, but there's usually a moment where they had like an aha moment where it triggered them to do something, right? So you get into the nonprofit where there's a deep, deep message, and there's a deep like journey, and you're making a huge impact, and there's a lot to it. Was there something in your life that brought you to that stage, or got you interested in it to try to make a difference?
Yeah, I do remember this moment. I didn't know that was my aha moment. It was just extremely difficult moment when I came to the United States about 8 years ago with 2 years old son, and I stayed with $38 in my pocket. So, and I came as a under domestic violence protection program. Mm. So, and it was extremely difficult to be a single mom and to be classified. I was always felt as I'm like classified, you know, I have a so-called Russian accent. I look in a certain way. I'm an immigrant. I'm a single mother. I was definitely like really lost here. So, and I was really praying on the floor on my knees. I remember this moment that I was just praying that no woman, no mother in the world has to go through the things that I am going through. And if I will have a chance to make an impact by reforming certain laws in America so refugees will have better legal protection and better opportunities to survive here, that's what I should do. But I didn't know that it was my aha moment because I didn't know like even how to survive with like no resources here and with 2 years old. And I had no idea that I will be able to open the nonprofit organization or be one day in Congress. I didn't think about that. Like at that moment, it was a strictly like survival time.
I love that. So let's take that moment, right? And you have the unique perspective of being able to look back and saying, that's my aha moment. And then seeing you soar to the successes. A lot of what we're talking about on this podcast is that journey, but a lot of people that hit that bottom don't rebound or bounce, and it takes a long time. Or what would you attribute to maybe internally, externally, but how you're in your look back from today, looking back at that moment, what did you do? Give us some insight as to how you did it.
Yeah, how you bounced back.
How did you bounce from that moment?
I did not break because I had 2 years old and I had to be strong for him. But also, I just decided, it was just a decision in my head that I have to survive, I have to go through, I have to find a solution, and I have to build my life here from scratch. Like, I have to, that I don't have anywhere to go else.
Burn the boats.
To go, so that was a decision. Yeah, of course, like, if to think we all have options, you know, like a lot of, like, we live in California, we see a lot of people living on the streets, yeah, having mental disorders, huge substance abuse issues. So do these people have chances or options? You know, I'm thinking about it a lot. You know, when you drive through downtown and you see so many homeless people, you think, do they have a choice? Is it a choice to live that way? I don't know. Did I have a choice that time to start drinking or using drugs just to release the stress or to really like fall into some, you know, mental disorder? Probably that was one of my options. And people under stress act differently. Yeah. But I just decided to, you know, get it together and just do my best.
It sounds like one of the most important traits that she's sharing with us is the power of love, quite frankly, the love for your son, facilitated your desire and resiliency to survive. And I
think that's part of it. I would challenge that in some degree, because I think there's a lot of people, to your point, that love their kid, but they don't decide to do it. They just choose alcohol. They choose shortcuts. They choose, fair. Right?
There, like there's a lot of people there's the disease component of it, though.
But there's also the easy button in life, right? Yeah. Like,
when, but what I can attribute it to also to upbringing. So I was doing sports professionally since I was like 7 years old. I think that prevention is the best treatment. Because when you are having some positive experience as a child, for example, it can be anything. It can be like, in my life, it was ping pong. But it was
you played professional ping pong?
Yeah, I did. Ping pong.
Do you have a ping pong table?
That is phenomenal.
Can we scrap this whole thing?
That was not on my bingo card.
That is awesome. I had no idea. Are you left-handed or right-handed?
Right-handed.
Shit.
So is there any doubt in your mind if you could beat both of us?
I mean, depends how good you are, but usually I do beat amateurs.
We are definitely amateurs. We're almost amateurs at everything that we do. Ping pong not excluded. Wow. Okay. So that was,
that's very important to you
being a professional ping pong player. Yeah, that's awesome. We are ping ponging around this conversation.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. That was phenomenal. That's awesome. That's awesome.
Wow.
Now I want to play.
Not expecting that. Okay.
But you see, it gave you an encouragement, and it's like a ping pong.
Sports reinforces
things. Sports, it brings some energy in, you know, and you feel
imagine how good you're going to feel when you whoop his ass on the table.
Well,
that's a good
point. To your point, though, I think I could hold my own. But that's not the point. But the point is like dealing with adversity, dealing with when you learn those things at 7 years old, that translates to how you react in moments of
stress,
or despair. Yeah. Or
because I was since 7 years old, I was at the sport camps by myself in summer, spending 1-2 months by myself just training a lot. And then it was a track and field athletics. But what I was just thinking, when I was going through the hard moment, you know, I started to work out more. I just started to like get it together, you know, and probably that came from childhood, I think.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
We have a saying, and I want to bring it up because I think it's such an important point, and I feel like it's missed on so many people. We have this saying, and one of our old dear friends came up with it, and it's, I decide. And we joke about it a lot, but you brought it up. It is. I decided to do something. I made this decision. I willed it to have an idea. So we joke around about it too, because people oftentimes get stuck in minutia. There's so many, like dating, there's so many options. I'm not going to decide. There's so many easy way outs to go drink or drugs or, you know, go have fun and stuff like that. But the actual point of like, I'm at my absolute low and I'm deciding that this is not going to be my finish line. Right, like people don't do that. They wallow in self-pity. They wallow in all of the negativity, and they don't make a decision to actually like get up.
But the thing is, like I was just when I was driving to your podcast, I was listening to audiobook, the only book that Steve Jobs had on his iPod. I don't know you guys if you know. So this is autobiography of a Yogananda. So it's a yogi's autobiography. You know this fellowship in LA, when you drive to Malibu, there is a fellowship, a beautiful sanctuary where all the religions like
Baha'i? Is it Baha'i?
No, it looks like as a park, beautiful park where all the religions come together. So it was founded by Yogananda, and that the book I was listening to. So and he speaks about mind over matter. Mind over money, mind over problems, the mind comes first. So the way the yogis manifest in everything is through first calming your mind, and then your mind generates everything. So the power of mind is incredible, and it is a matter of decision, but then that's why the mental health, I think, today should be so important, and so it should be really like taken care of like more, I think, in nowadays lives, because this is the starting point, mind over everything in your life.
So let's talk about that, because I think you're absolutely right. What do you do to keep your mind right?
I meditate.
How long? I'm always curious on how people.
I can meditate. Up to an hour.
Really? Just complete silence, or do you do guided, or?
No, just I like silence. I have this since childhood. Because in my childhood, as a child, I experienced a lot of stress. Our father left us early, and I don't know how, but I was meditating since I was probably like 6, 7.
Untaught, untrained. Untrained. It just happened naturally.
I was just closing my eyes and imagining the completely dark space, and that's how I was calming myself at home.
Wow.
When I was listening to, you know, everything was going on in the household. So, and that's then the healthy sleep is very important. Yeah. Yep. So a lot of successful people, you know, you cannot get a hold of them after 8 p.m. for a reason, that they taking their time to prepare for sleep and like really go to sleep early. Wake up early, like that's a
That's why I keep apologizing to you when I don't answer my calls after 8. It's exactly what she's talking about.
Do you track your sleep?
I do not.
You do not. Do you track the time that you're asleep? Is there a certain number that you, or is it just very natural? No. I organically fall asleep and I organically wake up.
I have the superpower. I can fall asleep like everywhere, like really? On this sofa. Like
okay, the real trick is, can you fall asleep and still beat Wynn at ping pong?
I think that's I would say power nap.
Absolutely.
Minus 125.
Yeah, absolutely. He just had a child and he hasn't slept in 4 weeks.
Yeah,
so.
No, I haven't. Yeah.
Oh, congrats.
Yeah, thank you. Oh, wow. Yeah, I haven't slept.
Oh, you didn't tell me. I told you about cybersecurity company and he didn't tell me.
Well, we didn't have time yet.
Yeah, we've covered a lot. We've covered a lot of topics for sure. So, okay, so there's sleep, meditation.
Food.
What you ingest.
I just don't eat. I just don't want to. After like 7-ish, 8-ish, mm-hmm. often I just eat really little, and then I eat next time. I eat like around 11 a.m. So it's like fasting.
So that window, the intermittent fasting.
The intermittent fasting.
Awesome. That's great.
A lot of water, good liquids. If you can, no alcohol, because I was just listening to so many programs.
You almost had me. I was almost sold on all of the tips and tricks, and then you got to that one. I'm like,
I was listening, you know, on TikTok to this video about like how actually FSB, you know, the Russian FSB, that they did trainings for their agents, and they explained them why they should not drink, because the neuron in the brain, they shrink.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
No. Shrinkage.
So I think that if you can avoid alcohol, or that's good,
yeah,
you know.
Well, okay. We'll have to work on that.
There's other things out there, Case.
Yeah. I mean, for the most part.
There's other things out there. Try some. I have some things for you.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't trust anything this guy gives me.
I mean, we're in California.
There's a huge
menu of things to try.
There is. So you are nonprofit, and then you said you had several businesses. Or is there any other ones that you do? And so you have cybersecurity, the nonprofit?
Just smaller
business. Are there any passion projects aside from work that just personally that you're interested in, that outside of all the different things? I'm not sure you fit all of this in 24 hours, but I guess it's not no alcohol and some sleep. But, but are there any other passion projects personally that you do that in your spare time, or is there?
Passion projects. I mean, I love to dance ballet.
Wow.
I'm fascinated by the whole culture of like classic ballet, you know, the pointy shoes, the whole culture of training. So when I have time, I go to ballet school.
That's very cool. That's really cool. So do you have the same thing as Steve Jobs, where you only listen to one book, or do you break it up into multiple books? Are there any?
No, I love listening to audiobooks. Okay. I don't read much, to be perfectly honest, because I think we just don't really have time to sit with a book and read. Sure. So when I do something, I listen all the time to audiobooks.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there do you have a favorite or one or two that you could share that for anyone listening?
I've listened to very interesting one, Power of Myth by Joseph Campbell.
Joseph Campbell.
Yeah, Joseph Campbell.
That's my favorite book. It is.
Yeah.
It is.
Are you serious?
He's a comparative. So this delves into different things. I majored in religion. Casey doesn't think that's a marketable thing. Yet here we are in the world. But, you know, his favorite line is follow your bliss.
Follow your bliss, exactly.
And that's a very big, powerful thing.
You stole my speech I'm
sorry.
I swear to God, I wanted to say that, but
yeah.
You
well, that was okay. Good. See, look at that.
It's very important. Myth is important. Creating your own myth is important. It will bring community together, and instead of having various religions having their rules, if you could just recognize that, a lot of good things can change the world. But we don't need to get into that today, Casey. But just know that we also agree on that religion's a thing and it's important.
Oh, I didn't argue that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm not sure, but what
creating your own myth is very important.
Studying we don't that need in to Northwestern
get into
does,
we don't need to get into that.
And then one more book was about the surfing the reality. So when you there is a specific technique when you bring your mind to certain state, when you can project and whatever is called manifest now, like project your future in simple steps, you know, just take don't take a lot of on you at this at one go, but just focus on something and then start to project it in a certain state of mind. So it's called surfing through the reality.
That's cool.
Reality surfing. Okay. So that was,
I'm always looking for a new one.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, that's really cool.
I like that.
You should definitely try Joseph Campbell too.
I will.
Power of Myth. I'm back. You know what? I'm going to buy it for you.
I'll take anything that you buy.
Listen, I know we got to wrap it up here, but listen, I wanted to thank you for coming down here. I really appreciate it. Man, we covered a ton of different things from your foundation to concepts of leadership to how to build rapport to keeping healthy and how to win and how to win on Fridays. And I think we did a great job. But yeah.
I'm advertising this pillow the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they stand out. This is a new little setup for us.
I just want to thank you, and I have to take a moment for this. This is unapologetic, but guys, listen. Look, we're back. It's fun. It's fun to be back here. We have Instagram. We have YouTube. We have all these channels. Download, like us. Send us messages. Let us know if there's someone you'd like to have as a guest on here, and we're happy to try to facilitate that. And again, Veronica, thank you very, very much. And
this was awesome. We covered a lot. I think we dived into your personal, into the professional, but then giving us a glimpse into tips and tricks on how you execute and do so many different things. Thank you for being here. Thank you for being honest and open with us. That was a lot of fun.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I'm honored to be here just before the New Year's.
Yeah, this is great.
This is great. This is awesome. Fun. Thank you.
That was fun.
All right.
Awesome.
Thank you.